From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last Thursday in Washington, D.C., when a group of disability rights activists staged a die-in outside Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell's office. The group was protesting the proposed cuts to Medicaid in the Senate's health care bill, which could amount to about $800 billion. Now, Republicans and conservatives have often countered that they don't consider them cuts. They considered it curbing the growth in spending, but we will talk about that. Millions of Americans rely on Medicaid, including 7 million adults with disabilities, and the fear among the disability community is that if these cuts go through, people with disabilities who now live independently would be forced into nursing homes because funding for in-home aids and assistance could be eliminated. Stephanie Woodward is the director of advocacy for the Center for Disability Rights in Rochester. She was arrested during last week's protests in D.C. She's one of many activists who say many Americans don't understand how the proposed legislation could impact every aspect of life for people with disabilities. And if you saw any of the photos from last Thursday, you probably saw Stephanie. I mean, she did not expect to go viral, but she did, with essentially being carried out of the Capitol. But here we are this morning with a headline in The Federalist online, with the headline being, "Let's Stop Pretending Medicaid Saves Lives." I know Stephanie will have a lot to say about that and more, so she is in studio with us. Are you going back to Washington today? Is that right?
I am.
So thank you for making time for us here.
Thanks for having me.
Stephanie Woodward, I said at the outset, you probably didn't expect to go viral last Thursday. Is that fair?
That was not anticipated whatsoever. I was just there to fight for the life and liberty of people with disabilities.
I'm looking at this picture, and listeners, you've probably seen it as well from that incident last week, and it's a picture of, were they Capitol Police?
Yes.
Capitol Police carrying Stephanie out, and Stephanie's outreached arm, and a little look of dismay on your face. I know you've been arrested before 13 times now, so this wasn't new for you, but what was the experience last Thursday like for you?
It was a really empowering experience to be surrounded by 60 other people with disabilities fighting for their rights and for their lives. So a lot of the people I was protesting with use home and community-based services, and this will hit very hard for them if they lose their attendance and their ability to live in the community. So to be able to do a die-in with people who I consider my family at this point, to save their lives and their rights, it was really empowering and important to me.
Did you expect to be arrested?
We knew that there was a chance to be arrested. So the way it works is usually if you're in the hallways of the Capitol building and you are blocking the hallway, that's Capitol Police territory. So we could expect that Capitol Police will arrest you there. However, many of us were actually in the office, and that is the senator's territory. So if the senator doesn't request you to be arrested, then no one will come and get you. They have to make that request. So it's similar to right now. We have about 15 protesters in Senator Gardner's office in Colorado right now, and they've been there for 40 hours now, and he hasn't requested that they be arrested so they can just stay. So,
how long were you there in McConnell's office?
Probably only an hour. So he requested us to be arrested pretty quickly.
We're this is sort of a strange question, but were Capitol Police, do they do their job reluctantly? Were they rough? I mean, what was that experience like?
They did their job. They were there to do their job, and I was there to do mine. It just so happened that our jobs contradicted that day. Some of them were not pleased with us. Others were rather sympathetic with us, particularly when they were holding us for about 10 hours afterwards. We had some Capitol Police who really treated us well and even stayed past the hours that they were supposed to be working in solidarity with us until all of us were released.
Is it surreal to be carried out, though? I mean, this image has gone viral. It has been linked to by numerous news sites. It has been sort of a rallying cause for a lot of people who are looking at what's going on in the disabilities community and otherwise to understand what's going on there. Is that surreal for you? I mean, this is probably the most publicity your face has gotten since you've done activist work.
Since I've been born, I'm
pretty
sure.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, it is surreal because the disability rights community has been doing this for a very long time. ADAPT has been around for over 35 years, fighting for disability rights, doing this stuff all of the time. And I've been carried out of other offices before. I've been cuffed before. And I didn't think that it was going to impact people as much as it does because no one seemed to have listened before. So I'm so glad that the American people are listening now.
Why do you think they are now?
Maybe because they realize that this is... lives are at stake. Lives are genuinely at stake. And people with disabilities, I don't think that they could fathom that people with disabilities would go and fight so hard for their rights. There is this stereotype that people with disabilities can't fight for themselves or can't speak for themselves and others have to do it for them. And now they're seeing that, no, we will fight for ourselves and for our lives.
Or can't travel. How do you go to Washington? You've traveled overseas and you've had people in your life tell you, wait, how did you do that, right?
Absolutely. When I lived in Ireland, people would say, well, how did you get here? And I was like, an airplane. And they're like, but you're in a wheelchair. And I'm like, it went on the airplane.
Wheelchairs go on airplanes too.
It was a little bit weird for me that that was a hard concept for people to, I guess, imagine. So it's no longer something people have to imagine anymore. They have now seen us fighting for our rights.
Let's back up before we get to some of our listener phone calls. And the phone started ringing earlier, but I do want you to know Stephanie's story a little bit before we take a few calls. So let's back up here. And why don't you tell me your personal story? You were born in a family that didn't really have disability on the radar. Is that right?
Yeah. And then that's often how you are born into. When you have a disability, you're usually born into a non-disabled family. My mom was a hairdresser. My dad was an electrician. We were very lower middle class. You never knew when the electric was going to be shut off. We had a strong Republican ideal family, but my dad learned pretty quickly that no amount of pulling on his bootstraps was going to get his disabled child any sort of health care. So I got Medicaid as a baby with a pre-existing condition, and Medicaid had paid for all of my surgeries growing up.
What was the condition?
Spina bifida. So it basically means your spine doesn't form all of the way. And so I needed a lot of spine surgeries, leg surgeries, hips, feet. In addition to that, I think what has been most dangerous in my life was the infections that I get. So I get a lot of kidney infections. And if you don't treat kidney infections with antibiotics or sometimes hospitalization with IV fluids and antibiotics, it can spread and it can be lethal when your body gets sepsis and all of that good stuff. So Medicaid has kept me alive to the point where I could become a lawyer and get my own private health insurance. So I am so thankful for that.
For families like yours who are learning what disability even means, sometimes there's this idea that, well, if we overemphasize the disability, they become, quote, like those people. You know, we've heard that concern among people with disabilities who heard that from their own parents, who obviously love them, but maybe didn't know better or were still learning that landscape. And so maybe, you know, you don't always reach out for the services or opportunities that are out there. What was it like for you and your family?
That's absolutely the case I went through. My parents were very well-intentioned, but they didn't want me to be seen like those people because there is this stereotype that people with disabilities can't do things, and they didn't want me to be associated with people who can't. So I was always pushed very far forward, and my dad would emphasize for me that non-disabled people will not take you seriously unless you are smarter than them and better than them, because then they might almost see you as an equal, which is really sad, but it's true. Even as an attorney, people question my intelligence because I use a wheelchair, and it shouldn't be the case. Hmm.
Your first gig, by the way, was as an intern for the Center for Disability Rights?
Yes. After I got back from Ireland, when everyone was asking, like, how can you travel in a wheelchair? I was like, well, what are people with disabilities doing? Because I had been so separated from the disability community. So I started interning at the Center for Disability Rights, and apparently they can't kick me now.
So your work there really seemed to blossom pretty quickly. There are certain things that happened that kind of paved the way for you to do more. What were some of those things?
So 2 months into my internship, we were doing a protest at Governor Cuomo's office. I believe that there was, or was it Governor Patterson at the time? Well, it was a governor. There's been so many.
This was back when, by the way.
This was 2009.
Yeah, probably been Patterson.
I apologize. We went through quite a few governors in
that Patterson Cuomo switch. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So they were considering caps to home care. So similar to kind of what we're fighting right now. So they're considering capping the amount of dollars that would go towards home and community based services. Which would cause more people to go to institutions. It was my first protest, and there was a call and response chant, and the person doing the call was running out of, like, voice. So I just decided to jump in to help him out. And I remember my CEO coming up to me afterwards saying, someone asked me who that girl was chanting so loudly. And I looked over and I was like, that's our intern. So, and that's the day I was offered a position part-time, and I worked through college and through a law school at the Center for Disability Rights.
And now, why don't you describe for our listeners sort of your day-to-day work now?
Now I am the director of advocacy. I get to see and oversee a team of 10 incredible advocates, and we do disability rights work locally, statewide, and nationally. So it might be working with a local business on making them more accessible in Rochester. It might be statewide policy, or it could be federal policy. We did just write the Disability Integration Act, which was introduced by Senator Schumer, and then Congressman Sensenbrenner, who is a Republican from Wisconsin, who was also a very good supporter of the ADA.
And some of the work that you do is to, yes, raise public awareness, get attention. You were there a week ago doing that with the Dyne in Senator McConnell's office, got a lot of visibility for that, moved a lot of people's thoughts about that. And but just for example, yesterday there was something going on. What did I miss yesterday?
So yesterday we went to the GOP headquarters, which happens to be about 3 seconds from the Center for Disability Rights. So as an ADAPT organizer, we organized about 40 people or so to go over there, and we did a sit-in at the GOP office demanding that the party, the local party, come out and openly say that they would oppose any bill that would have Medicaid cuts or caps in it, because we really believe that politics are local and we want our local party to have our backs when it comes to our life and liberty.
I'm going to out you right now then.
Have at it.
You're a registered Republican.
I am.
That surprises some people, doesn't it?
It surprises a lot of people that anyone like me would be a registered Republican, but I am. I grew up in a Republican household. I believe in fiscal conservatism, and I believe that cutting Medicaid will only cause more financial hardship on state taxpayers because the services that are needed will still be there, but it will cost more and it's going to take life and liberty away from people with disabilities. And I stand strong with our American values of life and liberty for all Americans.
Similar to the debate about healthcare, generally speaking, that people with medical needs have medical needs. And if you treat them all in the emergency room, that's the least efficient, most expensive way to do it.
Yes. And people who need attendant services will need them whether or not you let them live in the community. So nursing facility services throughout the nation are at least three times more costly than a home and community-based services. So having home and community-based services cut will only increase the cost on taxpayers to pay for nursing homes.
Stephanie Woodward's job allows her to and asks her to really understand what's going on with funding, with budgets, the outcomes here. So we're about to dive into what is actually on the table right now. And there's been a lot of debates about, is it a cut? Is it curbing the growth in spending, which is not actually a cut? What's the actual impact? The Federalist had that piece today. Let's stop pretending Medicaid saves lives. Ezra Klein and Vox had a strong rebuttal to that. We'll get to those kinds of things. But listeners, if you've got questions going forward here, Stephanie's a good person to kind of lean on for some of this. And you can call the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK. That's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We will get to those coming up. But on the subject of cuts versus, you know, how we describe this, well, let's listen to what Kellyanne Conway had to say about Medicaid. She doesn't believe it's actually cuts, and her view is, you know, it's mostly able-bodied people are going to have cuts, and can't they just get jobs? Well, let's listen to what she had to say.
If you are currently in Medicaid, if you became a Medicaid recipient through the Obamacare expansion, you are grandfathered in. We're talking about in the future. You know, Obamacare took Medicaid, which was designed to help the poor, the needy, the elderly, the sick, the disabled, also children and pregnant women. It took it and it went way above the poverty line and opened it up to many able-bodied Americans who should probably should at least see if there are other options for them. If they're able-bodied and they want to work, then they'll have employer-sponsored benefits like you and I do.
That's Kellyanne Conway talking to George Stephanopoulos on ABC News, making the point that most of what we're talking about here is what they think is frivolous Medicaid for able-bodied people who should otherwise get jobs. And that's what's on the table, and who wouldn't support trimming that back? But they don't view them as cuts. They view them as curbing the growth in spending, and that this is being overplayed in the media. What do you say to that?
I say they should probably read the CBO report, which gives quite a different story. But also, this might get a little wonky, but I'm trying to explain
it. No, wonky's good right now. It's okay.
As easily as to understand as possible. I might just throw out that my friend Ramteen, and I wouldn't even attempt to pronounce his last name, but if you Google Ramteen and Medium, he wrote a really good article explaining this in very layman's terms about how this would work. But the simple summary is if you cap state spending. And that's what you do, is you're kind of giving the state a set amount. And right now, the federal government matches. So if I need to spend $100, they will match a percent of that. What they're proposing to do is to cap that by giving a specific dollar amount. So that would cap the state spending. So what it means for people with disabilities who need attendant services are that home and community-based services, though they are cheaper, are a optional benefit under Medicaid, whereas nursing facility services are a mandatory benefit. They must be paid for despite the fact that they're significantly more. The cost is just so significantly higher. But when you have a limited budget given by the federal government, rather than matching what you need, you have to cut the optional services first. So the optional services being home and community-based services, forcing people who don't need to be institutionalized into institutions because they can't get the help they need in any other way. So now we have the state, who's still getting the same amount of money from the federal government, putting people in a more costly institution, meaning that states are now going to have to pick up the additional cost when you could just leave people in the community and have it be cheaper and have people with disabilities have their life and liberty respected by letting them live in freedom, which every American has a right to do.
So as a registered Republican who understands the sweet spot that conservatives claim to have when it comes to fiscal responsibility, you're saying this is going to be more expensive, reduce life and liberty, and threaten people who just want to live independently. Yes?
Absolutely.
Okay. When we're talking about, you know, the possibility that that these proposed cuts, are they cuts to you? Or is it curbing the growth in spending?
These are cuts, not just cuts to funding. This is cuts to people's lives.
Okay. When it comes to the impact on lives, another pushback you're getting from some on the conservative side is that it's overblowing it to say that people will die. That there's this, people are taking offense to this idea that, you know, we can have an argument, but it's not an argument to say that people will die. Well, are people going to die?
People will die. If I didn't have Medicaid growing up, I would have died. My kidney infections would have taken me out. People in the community who need attendant services, who refuse to go back into a nursing facility, and we have people out there right now crying, saying, if this goes through, I won't go back. I'm not going back to the nursing facility. They will try to make it on their own. They're not going to get the services they need. They're going to fall out of their wheelchairs and get injured. They're going to injure themselves by trying to cook and fall on their stove or have the hot things fall on them. And it's going to cause injuries and deaths. And when people are put into nursing facilities, there have been plenty of studies done showing that people who go to nursing facilities die faster than people who live in the community. So it will 100% result in death. So if you're looking to curb spending by killing people, then you're doing a great job, but that doesn't align with my American values of life and liberty.
My guest is Stephanie Woodward, Director of Advocacy for the Center for Disability Rights. And last a little bit here, and then we'll take your phone calls here. In The Federalist, John Daniel Davidson wrote a piece out this morning called Let's Stop Pretending Medicaid Saves Lives. And I'm just going to read from that. I'll read a little bit of the rebuttal because, again, I mean, I've said on this program, and I know y'all laugh at me, but I'm an evidence guy. I want to know what the studies say about Medicaid. So John Daniel Davidson writes this: proponents of the thousands will die argument cite evidence that health insurance is correlated to health outcomes, which is a fair point as far as it goes. But they too often conflate health insurance with Medicaid coverage. That's important for two reasons. The majority of coverage gains under Obamacare have come from Medicaid expansion. And secondly, Medicaid coverage isn't the same as private insurance, not even close. The distinction is important because research has shown that being on Medicaid produces no better health outcomes than being uninsured. This argument has been hammered home by conservative healthcare scholars. End quote. That's John Daniel Davidson in The Federalist. Ezra Klein, writing for Vox, said this is not only wrong, but, quote, imagine you're worried that Medicaid doesn't do enough to improve the health outcomes of the poorest people in America. Perhaps you'd improve Medicaid, or give them money to purchase good private insurance, or maybe you would plow money into a job guarantee or a direct cash transfer. What you wouldn't do is take the money you're spending on their health care now and redirect it into a capital gains tax cut for the rich, end quote. Ezra Klein goes on to say that, yes, they're citing a study. It's often known as the Oregon study. And here is what Klein says about that study. He says, the argument with the Oregon study is wrong. These arguments are mainly referencing a study known as the Oregon Medicaid Experiment. The study took advantage of a situation that reads like a dark satire of the American healthcare system. Oregon had money to expand Medicaid, but not enough money, so it held a lottery for poor people who needed health insurance. If you won the lottery, you got Medicaid. If you lost the lottery, you got nothing. This created two similar groups that researchers could study, one that got Medicaid, one that didn't. The study only lasted 2 years, and it only included 10,000 people, so there is much it can't tell us about long-term effects of actually having health insurance. But what it found, in short, was that Medicaid protected enrollees from catastrophic health costs, boosted the likelihood of people reporting they were in good, very good, or excellent health by 25%, it cut depressive and mental health symptoms by 30%, and increased both diabetes diagnoses and treatment. But the study also disappointed Medicaid's backers. In particular, there was no evident improvement in blood sugar, blood pressure, or cholesterol levels after 2 years. Now, some researchers have argued that the study didn't have enough enrollees to measure those indicators. But even if you reject their arguments, it simply isn't true that large increases in self-reported physical health and mental health, alongside better diabetes treatment and protection from financial ruin, is a state of being, quote, no better than being uninsured. End quote. So that's Ezra Klein saying, when you hear that from the Federalist and otherwise, the evidence doesn't show it. I'm open to the evidence. So, Stephanie, that's a lot to digest, but I know you've been all over this anyway here. What do you make of it when the Federalist says, oh, look at that Oregon study, and, you know, Medicaid's too limited, it's too narrow, and people who need good care can't get it anyway. It's not the same as good private insurance.
Well, I can tell you the first thing is many good private insurance companies don't cover long-term services and supports, which is what people with disabilities who need attendant services need. Medicaid is the largest payer of in-home supports and services. It is basically the only insurance company that will cover the majority of Americans with disabilities to live in their own homes. So if they didn't have Medicaid at all, they wouldn't get to live in their own homes. And if they had private insurance, they wouldn't get to live in their own homes. So the only way to live in freedom is to get on Medicaid. And we have plenty of people with disabilities who do work, who do the Medicaid buy-in program. So they're paying their premiums just like people pay their private premiums to get this health insurance. So Medicaid, particularly just in the lives of people with disabilities who need long-term services and supports, does make a world of difference. Because if you don't think there's a difference between living in your own home and choosing what you eat and when you shower and what you watch on TV and living in a nursing facility where all of your choices are controlled for you, I think that you might be having a misconception of what it's like to live in a facility.
Let me also hit this point again. Number one, as someone, I've never been on Medicaid, so I have a lot to learn. And frankly, I have a lot to just simply listen about. But number two, I know there's some concern about being overly reliant on anecdotes as opposed to studies, but I do think it's important to hear these cases. You can't say Medicaid doesn't save lives and then not listen to people like Stephanie's story. So let me ask you one more time. Do you think Medicaid saved your life?
I think Medicaid kept me alive for 25 years, and I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for Medicaid. Simple as that.
All right. So, again, I'm just trying to listen. I want the evidence just like anybody else, but we're listening to Stephanie Woodward, who is the Director of Advocacy for the Center for Disability Rights. After our only break of the hour, we'll take some of your phone calls. 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We'll take those calls, and we'll hear more from Stephanie about what she thinks is going to happen next with healthcare in our next half hour. And let me tell you what's coming up Friday on the next Connections. Have you heard of geothermal energy systems? It's a growing trend in renewable energy. It's becoming more popular in homes in our area. Not necessarily cheap, but the question is there a return on the investment? We toured a home in Fairport that uses solar and geothermal systems. We're going to talk to the owner about the technology, about the financial and environmental impacts, and answer any of your questions as well. So we try to get to kind of net zero when it comes to our energy uses. That's tomorrow. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. On Twitter, Sarah says, Evan, shout out to Stephanie for her inspiring work for disability rights. Keep fighting the good fight. Rochester is with you. If you're just joining us, my guest, Stephanie Woodward, didn't expect that her face would go viral. It did a week ago when she was part of a protest kind of called a die-in outside, actually in Senator Mitch McConnell's office. Of course, the majority leader is trying to round up the votes to pass the new version of the health care bill. And the concern is the impact on Medicaid and especially on the disability community in our country. Well, Stephanie was carried out of that office by Capitol Police, and the picture of her went viral attached to that story. And let's listen to just a little bit of what that protest sounded like last Thursday. You recognize that voice?
That sounds like me.
And before I grab some phone calls, again, for our listeners just joining us here, you know, what is that moment like for you when you know you're about to be arrested and brought out? You're trying to send a message. You feel like that's the best way to make an impact.
Well, we had tried for months upon months to have meetings and play nicely like everyone suggests we should have done. We've done that. We've done that for actually years, and particularly in the beginning of this session. And when we saw a bill come out that didn't even have disability mentioned in all of the pages, I do think that that was probably the most effective way to get the word out there. And I guess if that's viral, I did my job.
All right, let's get some phone calls. I'm going to start with Kate in Pittsford first up on the phones. Go ahead, Kate.
Hey, Evan. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Good. I have two scenarios that 10 years ago I wouldn't have had any clue what Medicaid was about, and we were a family that never would have even thought about it. But I had two elderly parents that went through a fairly long time of major medical situations, and we ended up with my mom running out of money and having to go Medicaid pending into a nursing home facility. And what I witnessed during that time, and she only lasted about 45 days through a medical mishap at the facility, and a whole host of things that I don't think people realize. But the realization is that Medicaid pays for a huge safety net for people that run into situations, and it's going to hit our population even more. And I just, the other thing that I witnessed was during the 2008-2009 recession debacle, a ton of friends and I lost our jobs through downsizing of companies and various reasons, but Medicaid paid a huge gap because suddenly we were faced with, you know, our insurance being paid, and then you're handed a huge bill for $400 or $500 a month, and you've got the mortgage payment. Well, when you're not earning enough, you've got a Medicaid support system there as well. But I also have folks that work with spinal cord injury folks, and Medicaid is a critical juncture. And as United States of America and the wealth that we have in this country, it's an absolute sham to absolutely think about not enhancing these programs and the health and the quality and the control of what's being delivered, but that you cannot pull the rug out from a lot of people, particularly when there are instances that are out of your control. It's a part of life to get old. It's a part of life to go through economic cycles. And I just think it's shameful. And why aren't we holding insurance companies more accountable and being much more innovative and much more aggressive on our ability to take care of every human being and not put these folks in a position to be nervous and scared and upset? We are way too mature of a country to be acting this way and to be putting people in this kind of jeopardy situation. And I myself have pre-existing conditions. My parents did. People don't know how many, there are so many pre-existing conditions out there that you all will, and shame on the government for making exemptions in that as well as an age tax. But that's all I have to say. I just wanted to make note. I've lived through it. I understand what Medicaid is, and there this absolutely should be an enhancement to the program versus a tearing apart of the program and a benefit to the wealthy that, shame on them.
All right, Kate, thank you for the phone call. Let me work backwards because she gave you a lot to think about there, but she brought up pre-existing conditions, which are making a comeback if this health care bill goes through here. And why don't you tell me what that means in the disability community?
Well, a lot of us were born with our disabilities, so we have pre-existing conditions from birth, but also people who acquire disabilities and then seek to get private insurance, they now have a pre-existing condition. Although the Affordable Care Act did help us with pre-existing conditions, there are still many things that I can't even get life insurance with my pre-existing condition. So the idea that I might not be able to get health insurance either is really scary, because I don't think that a person should be not denied their ability to have their health taken care of simply because they have a disability.
Anything else you want to add to what Kate is sharing there about her family experience there?
I think that it's really a good highlight that not good for her mother, but that she didn't last long in a facility because of what happens there. There's not to say that every facility is terrible, but you don't have the freedom that you have in the community. You don't have the people taking care of you in the way that you want them to, that would help you to live longer. So it only goes to further our point that people don't live these beautiful lives in institutions. It costs more to make people die.
Yeah, and just think about when surveys are asking Americans, asking anybody, how do you want to die? That's not a pleasant question, but whether you have a disability or not, it doesn't matter. How do you want to die? Most people say, I'd like to die quietly at home, surrounded by loved ones. I want to be at home.
Absolutely.
I want to be in a comfortable place. I don't want to be hooked up to machines. How do many people die, especially with a little bit of means or the way the system moves people? Usually in a room hooked up to machines. And people who want to be at home end up usually, survey show, living longer. There's more comfort there. There's more desire to be alive, to work there. So why wouldn't people want to live at home? That sort of is a logical thing, right?
I think people do want to live
yeah,
at home.
That's right.
The bigger question is, why are we having a healthcare bill proposed that would keep people from living the American dream of living at home and being free?
All right. Again, I'm just going to keep outing her. She's a registered Republican. My guest is Stephanie Woodward, Director of Advocacy for the Center for Disability Rights. John in Rochester is my next caller. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Stephanie. I think you might have answered this question. I heard part of it. Obamacare expanded Medicaid to non-poor families and people, which I think is sort of an abuse of what Medicaid was intended for. And I think you addressed that. I didn't hear the complete answer. But the point I wanted to make also is I think government is a lot of the problem. Through the public employee unions, whether they're state or federal, if you look at public employees and the benefits and wages today to comparable jobs in the private sector, they're much more substantial. And I think the public employee unions have contributed to a lot of unaffordability of government and the cost of government. I think if you go to a right-to-work legislation, which a lot of states are going to, this would help dramatically in the budgets. What are your thoughts there?
All right, John, thank you for the phone call. Stephanie, go ahead.
Well, I don't think that I would ever want to pit two groups against each other of who deserves health care and who doesn't. Our focus is solely on people with disabilities and how Medicaid helps us live in freedom. I'm not as aware of how other people in government jobs get their health care. I work for a not-for-profit, I can tell you that my health care is limited to what my not-for-profit could afford. But I do believe that Medicaid has been expanded, and it has been expanded to many people. But I think it's also important to recognize that it was expanded to help people with disabilities as well. There is a program called the Community First Choice Option, which gave states an incentive to get people out of nursing homes and into the community. And the proposed bill would eliminate that state option that is incentivizing states right now to get even more people with disabilities out of nursing homes and into the community. So we're taking miles back, not just steps. We're taking miles back.
All right, back to the phones we go. And Don in East Rochester next. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call. Stephanie, you are a hero, whether you want to accept that designation or not, but you are a hero in my eyes for standing up for what you believe in and in preventing this steamroller of backward reactionaries from sabotaging our health care system. These Republicans, and by the way, I hope what you've seen makes you want to change your party affiliation, but these Republicans, the right-wing Republicans, have been wanting to destroy Medicaid since the day it was born back in the 1960s under Lyndon Johnson. They've been wanting to destroy it then, and they are using the excuse of so-called health care reform to do damage to this institution that they've been wanting to destroy since the 1960s. That's what it's all about. These right-wing Republicans are out there to do as much damage as they can to Medicaid, and then they'll say, well, look at how bad it is, and then they'll want to do it even further. We need to strengthen Medicaid. What we really need is single-payer health care for all. Most of the world does it, and most of the world spends less on health care and gets better results by doing it that way. But you're a hero, Stephanie, even though you may not want that designation.
Now, Don, don't hang up. I got a question for you.
Okay.
All right, because I want Stephanie to weigh in on her thoughts on single payer. I know you wanted to talk about that, but let me ask you this, Don. I know you were being sort of cheeky saying maybe she'll change her party registration, but don't we need a country with big tent parties, or at least parties that will have a mix of views that can mix it up and sort of fight for prominence within the tent of that party? You don't want just monoliths, right? You want to be able to debate ideas within parties.
Well, the Republicans are not a big tent party. They are a right-wing.
Well, how are they going to get to there being a big tent party if people like Stephanie are told you got to get out, right?
I was just being a little facetious.
I know. I'm being hard on you, Don.
I mean, I was just being facetious mostly. But the Republican Party is not a big tent party. Even the Democratic Party is not a big tent party, because every time the Republicans move to the right, the Democrats move to the right also, even though it may not be as extreme. The whole direction in the past 30 or 40 years has been toward more right-wing, less government intervention, less government helping the people. This is what the Republicans want. They've been wanting to destroy this system since the day it was born. They've been wanting to get rid of things like Social Security since the day it was born in the 1930s. And now they have somewhat of the political power to do it. We need to stop them.
All right, Don, I appreciate the phone call. I was being a little hard on Don. You going to change your party registration?
You know, it puts me in a hard place every time, you know, when you disagree with someone, your choices are to either get away from them or stay and try to work it out. And it would be really great if I could convince my fellow Republicans that Medicaid helps people live in life and liberty, and that we need a healthcare system that aligns with our American values.
Is that single payer?
It could be. I think that is more aligning than what has been proposed so far, because I don't think that your income status should depend on whether or not you get healthcare that helps you live. Being an American means that you have the right to life and liberty and pursuit of happiness, like just by being here. So there's no asterisk saying unless you cost too much, in which case then no, you don't get to have those basic rights and values. So having a system where we take care of each other to help all of us achieve the American dream is what's important.
But Don is saying he thinks Republicans want to destroy the system, and obviously he's got like sort of a dark view of it. As a Republican, don't you think at least that your fellow Republicans are thinking they really believe in competition and markets and that this is their view of what is potentially better for everybody? Whether the evidence supports it or not, do you ascribe the same dark, nefarious ideals that Don does to Republicans on healthcare?
I think there is some truth behind this, that Republicans have never been a huge fan of the Medicaid system. However, I think that the party that I'm registered with is also not a particularly diverse party that understands the circumstances that every American is in. And the diversity is what really matters. If you don't understand, if you've never been a Medicaid user, you might not know how important it is to live in the community and how Medicaid can help you do that, and how a little cost can go a long way to saving costs.
And Don, by the way, I mean, I think back to Pat Walsh. Shout out to Mr. Walsh, my American History Honors teacher from 11th grade. And one day he said, go home and ask your parents if you would stop paying Social Security. If you could stop paying Social Security, would you? And he said, 29 to 30 of you are going to come back and your parents will say yes, because they deserve to keep their own money and not be forced into a government system. Well, that was Pat Walsh's view. So he didn't want to destroy Social Security because he thinks he wants to hurt people. He thinks the ideal is more control of your own money, that kind of a thing. So, Don, my job is not to defend entire ideologies or parties, but just to help people see most of us are not nefarious, whatever side we claim to be on or whatever party we are aligned with. But it's just a matter of winning debates and ideas. And obviously, Stephanie Woodward is doing a lot to win the war of ideas right now. I mean, her picture went viral, and it wasn't just her picture. It was the sentiment behind it from that protest last week at Senator Mitch McConnell's office. Let's get back to your phone calls. Bonnie in Rochester next. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yes, hi there. Of course, a lot to say about this, but we'll do the best we can. To begin with, in order to have a life of health, and to stay healthy, you have to have a health care system. Even if you're fortunate enough to have minor health needs, the risk of having health problems and also having needs to stay healthy are in the absolute range of need. So one of the differences here is that some of us, and I think many of us, believe that health care and health coverage in all its forms should be a right. It's not something that should depend on whether you're poor, whether you're this, whether you're that, whether you're disabled, whether you're not. It should be for everyone, because everyone has issues that could potentially be serious, but also issues of knowing what is good health. How do you prevent things from happening? So that is definitely a right. And if that issue could be agreed upon, we'd be a lot further ahead. I want to also say, I worked with people with disability for 32 years during the time beginning with the time when they were deinstitutionalizing. And so most of my experience, I want people listening just to know, because it applies to what we're talking about, is to be to work with families. Families themselves, families whose family member lives independently, people who have more severe challenges, who need more support. And I can tell you right now that I can't think of almost any service, I don't care, that applies to people with disabilities that doesn't get Medicaid funding. Some of it is smaller than others. Some of it is maybe episodic, but it all depends on Medicaid, especially in New York, because I remember the times when the issue of payment for institutional care, and then came, you know, the desired change to community care, community options, you know, integrating people in the community, that the money issue there, without Medicaid, that a lot of these services would never have been able to be developed, and they continue to need that support from Medicaid in order to reach there. So it's not just the nursing home issue. That's an important issue. It's also maintaining families so that they can support both emotionally themselves and their family member who is disabled. It is so that people can have, without Medicaid, there would have been no interdisciplinary options for people. So in other words, when you have a disability, you may have several areas of functioning that need attention. That's interdisciplinary. That still is a model that should be used more than it's used now. That was funded by Medicaid. I could go on and on and on, but I guarantee you, I can say with absolute certainty, that without Medicaid, not only would people have the nursing home issue, but families. It sometimes requires a lot of support to be able to show the love you have for your family member by being able to support them. That all those programs would be affected. So please do not think that Medicaid for folks with disabilities is a small item that if I just cut some things or reduce the payment, nothing will happen of seriousness. That is absolutely a total lie.
All right, Bonnie, thank you for the phone call. Stephanie, you want to add to that?
I think she points out another really important ideal that I think the Republican Party shares, is keeping families together, and Medicaid helps keep families together. You don't have to be torn apart. Your disabled child doesn't have to go to an institution if Medicaid is there to help cover home and community-based services. Mom doesn't have to go to a nursing home when she gets too old. And where it breaks my heart the most is seeing a couple who has been together for 60 years, and one needs more help than the other does, but the other can't provide that help. So having home and community-based services cut means that your wife of 60 years might have to go to a nursing home. And when you guys die, you always imagine being together doing that, and instead you're going to be separated by miles and miles. And it's heartbreaking. We should be able to keep families together and save money by using Medicaid appropriately and not just gashing it.
All right, back to the phones. And before I come to Jeff and Brighton, I can't help but think of how much more effective I think Stephanie's, just the rhetoric is probably when it comes to landing with conservatives. I mean, as a Republican yourself, you're talking so much about protecting families, freedom, individual liberty, and actual fiscal conservatism. And I'm not saying that progressives don't have points to make, but often conservatives are very suspicious of progressive points, and progressives are very suspicious of conservative points. And we don't often speak each other's language. You're speaking the language of a lot of conservatives. Have you heard it work? Have you heard some, you know, people in any community, whether it's government or not, say, look, I'm a conservative, but that's just making sense to me?
Absolutely. And I think that's why Congressman Sensenbrenner introduced the Disability Integration Act, which is a bill that we've worked on. And the act basically says that any insurance provider, if that insurance provider would pay for you to live in an institution, they must also pay for you to live in the community. And it will, whether it's Medicaid or a private insurer, they, if they're going to pay for one, they have to pay for the other. So it would get rid of this Medicaid institutional bias where you must pay for institutionalization. He believed in it so much that he didn't just co-sponsor the bill. He introduced it. And we're seeing other Republicans sign on to this bill now. So family values, saving money, freedom, it makes sense. This is, I don't think this is a partisan issue. I think this should be common sense.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Jeff in Brighton. Go ahead, Jeff.
Hello, how are you?
Good.
Good. I just wanted to respond to an earlier caller who advocated for right to work in New York, which would be a disaster in that the labor movement has really lifted all boats throughout the country and the state by bringing good wages and benefits, including good health care benefits. And to go in the opposite direction would be a big mistake, and we don't want to be on a race to the bottom. The decline in unionism is part of the reason we're in having the problem we're in, in that we have seen a cut to a lot of union contract benefits that many of us have worked all our lives to earn. And one of the manifestations of that has been, for example, costs more towards the cost of a car for health care than it does for the steel, in part because we have a very expensive health care system. And so I'm interested in knowing more about will your guest and her organization support a way that most countries deal with this by having a single payer system that takes a lot of the cost out of the system by putting the cost, the resources towards services rather than intermediaries like insurance companies.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Our organization is pretty clear. We support people with disabilities, and in any way we can get people with disabilities to live in freedom is the way we want to go. We don't work in government. We work most of the time against government in fighting for people with disabilities. But so I won't tell you how you have to make the system work. I'm only going to tell you you got to make it work. It's similar to the ADA. ADA says businesses have to be accessible. We're not telling businesses how to do it. We're just telling you have to do it. So we are fighting to save Medicaid because it keeps people in freedom. We're not telling the government how to get this done. We're just telling them get it done so people with disabilities can live in freedom.
You're going to Washington, what, right when you get out of here?
I have a plane at 5 o'clock.
Oh, 5 o'clock plane tonight. So what are you going to try to get done in Washington? What's next for you?
Right now we're working to further the Disability Integration Act as well because we hope that this health care bill will be reviewed and come up with something a little bit more balanced. But the only other way to save our people is to get the Disability Integration Act passed because at least they might have a chance to get home and community-based services. Of course, other things will be cut for them, such as their assistive technology, their medications, and things like that. But the first and foremost thing that we want to make sure is that people can live in freedom and not be stuck and warehoused in institutions unnecessarily.
And again, 30 seconds, that bill, the other bill, the what's the name of the integration? I'm sorry.
The Disability Integration Act.
What's the short pitch on what it would do?
The short pitch is that any insurance company that would pay for an individual to live in an institution must also pay for them to live in the community if they want to live in the community.
And you're as she said, gaining more support on that. So you're going to Washington. Going to come back when?
Monday.
So you got a lot of work to do. I know it's a busy schedule, and I know it has been a whirlwind since a week ago and the protest at Senator Mitch McConnell's office. Thank you for fitting in time for our listeners. It's nice seeing you here, and we'll talk to you again.
Thanks so much.
Stephanie Woodward is the Director of Advocacy for the Center for Disability Rights, here telling her story and talking about proposed health care bills that are out there right now. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer. Always a great job. Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. And just a reminder, we're in a one-day only membership campaign as we end our fiscal year. If we're ending our fiscal year and we're having a one-day membership campaign, you do the math. We need you. 454-6300. Jump online at WXXI.org. Please give. Please join this community, this wonderful community of listeners. I'm going to be here telling you to give from 4 to 6 today because I love doing that, and I love being here, and I love being a sustaining member at WXXI. Talk to you tomorrow.